The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands and millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept it, and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is the sixth day of this seven-day sesshin here at Turtleback Zendo in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, in March 2019, on a day that is becoming more and more glorious. In contrast to what's been happening in the Midwest and the West, where there's been a bomb cyclone, a superstorm that is of great expanse and has caused untold destruction, power outages, actually apparently pushed a train off a track in New Mexico, and blinded people with such furious whiteout in Colorado and other parts of that part of the world as to cause accidents. People were actually killed trying to rescue other people. The temperature was quite cold, to the point where there was a young woman who was had her mother and some other relatives in her car. They were driving in Colorado Springs, and they simply could not see. It was so much of a whiteout. And those of us who've been in the Rochester, New York area know what whiteouts are like. Apparently this was more like a super whiteout. And it was so cold and so incredibly windy. There were gusts clocked at 97 miles an hour in Colorado Springs and over 100 in other places. There were high wind warnings in New Mexico, including at Mountain Gate. And lots of snow in various places, although it happened in Ojosarco, we've now got 14 inches of snow. On the other side of the mountain, which normally gets more precipitation, they got almost no snow, but they did get the high winds and the power outages. Anyway, this young woman, it was so fiercely windy that she was afraid to even get out of the vehicle and walk to a hospital that was not very far away, quite close. These things are happening. The world is being shaken up. And how are we dealing with it? I'll set that aside for a moment and make some comments about what the Buddha has said. Primarily that we are conditioned beings. We are conditioned beings, and of course psychology echoes that as well. Some conditioning is quite appropriate and most helpful for navigating culture, staying safe, and living long and happy lives. However, there's a lot of conditioning that impedes our ability to live fully. When I went to the Rochester Zen Center, I was terrified of Kapa Roshi. Felt like he could see right through me. And that was a very scary proposition. Because if he could see right through me, he knew exactly where to create pain if he was inclined in that direction, and thankfully he was not. I was terribly vulnerable, it felt. Incredibly vulnerable. And it took all my courage to go to Doksan each of the times that I was able to do so. It's a worldwide phenomenon, actually, to feel anxious in the company of people that might have power over us or or would be able to hurt us or would think negatively about us. It's amazing what we fill our lives with. There was a book that was put together, 1930s, I think it was, a little book of drawings done by Rinzai Monk, a day in the life of an Unsui, which is a novice monk. And it's beautifully illustrated, and oh my goodness, it is right on the money. Going more or less to illustrate all the things that go on in a temple, you know, going to Sesshin, the free day after Sesshin where you're washing your clothes and helping each other cut their hair and or shave their heads, basically. Cutting the hair is kind of there's not much hair to cut. And so on and so forth. And there's one illustration that shows monks grabbing for dear life onto pillars in the temple and being hauled off those pillars by the jikijutsu. And they are on their way. Well, let's put it this way. Sanzen has been called for. It's Sanzen time. It's time to go and meet the master and present your mind state to your Zen master. And they are wanting to do anything but that. Anything but that. They're hanging onto these pillars for dear life. To go in and to face the master and not have reached that place of such liberation that it really is fine with you, whatever goes on in there, in the sense of the teaching, in the sense of whether the Roshi is accepting your understanding or not, whether that person is urging you to go deeper, whether that person saying anything about how you might improve. All of these at a certain level can feel incredibly threatening to a student, because especially if we've grown up in a household where the standards, so to speak, although I'm not sure I would like to call it standards, are very high, and where we're constantly reminded that we're not meeting those standards, and perhaps there's even consequences for not meeting those standards, at least some of which are not discernible by little kids. I remember a student of mine told me once that when he was 3 years old, his older siblings and he were lined up, told to drop their drawers and put their hands, grab their ankles, at which point their father wailed away with him with a belt, buckle first, of course. And he didn't understand what he had done that deserved that kind of treatment, or that warranted that kind of treatment. It was one of the early traumatizing experiences he had in his family. As it turns out, the father, apparently one of the kids, had done something, and the father didn't know which kid, or was trying to give an object lesson to every one of them, and so he beat all of the kids, even the three-year-old. When we have that kind of experience, we really don't want to allow ourselves to be vulnerable to anybody who might have any authority over us or any power over us. And many of us who've experienced those kinds of things find our way into Zen practice. It might not even be in this lifetime that we experience something like that. we could have some faint conditioning left from a former life. There are people who grow up in beautiful families, but their lives before that, and I know at least one person that can remember back many lives, all of which were horrendous. And so even if you have a wonderful, loving, caring family, there is still perhaps the conditioning residue that makes it difficult for you to walk into sanzen in a relaxed and open way. This is just exactly what the Buddha taught, that we are conditioned. And if our conditioning is challenging, is negative, is painful, then practice is going to bring it up. Practice brings up everything. And our first inclination is to shut it down. We have a lot of romantic ideas about what Zen practice is before we start it. It's got quite the hype. Peace, joy, ease, freedom. And when we walk into that sesshin, we start doing the practice, and initially we're distracted enough by just the mechanics of doing the practice, learning to do the practice, that absorbs our attention. But as we get better and better at bringing our mind to the extended out breath, for example, things start to come out of the woodwork. And we usually try to shut them down. And traditionally, the instruction has been to just focus on the practice, whatever the specific practice is, whether it's koan work, whether it's an extended out breath, whether it's a combination of both. To, in essence, although it's not specifically said in this way, to use the practice to shut everything else out. Unfortunately, that just keeps the conditioning trapped and working underground, driving our reactions to things. The traditional Japanese instruction was to cut everything else. That was the word, cut. What wasn't expressed was what that word cut meant. It meant cut our attachments to whatever it was that was appearing in our mind. Not cut the thing itself out. Cut our attachments to thoughts. I misunderstood this for a while. And so every time a thought would start to come up, I'd chop it off at the feet. Until one day I began to realize that I was so good at that, that as soon as a thought that would have been useful to come up would start, zap, it was shut down. And it told me that I better undo that practice, because there might be some times when I would need to think. And so I had to back out of it. Practice takes courage, and we don't realize what that really means. It means to walk straightforwardly into whatever comes up, whatever appears, whether it's fear, terror. No matter what it is, especially if it's one of those, because other things like finding ourselves daydreaming about some romantic interest or what we're going to do after sesshin, Those are sort of mild distractions, and it's important then to bring our mind back to the practice with strength and vigor. And we do that by giving ourselves more fully to the extended out-breath, to take that out-breath so far out that we can't hold on to whatever it is, and still do the out-breath. That's effective and positive under those kinds of circumstances. But when it comes up to something else, a terror or a memory of an experience that's quite frightening, you don't want to do it with that. Interestingly enough, the same person that was, as a three-year-old, belted, ended up in the Marines, and by the time he came to Hidden Valley Zen Center, he was on his way out of the Marines with a TBI, a traumatic brain injury, and PTSD, and he was being retired from that. He had been a platoon leader, had led two platoon, had been on two tours in Iraq as a platoon leader. And in the second tour, within 5 minutes of a firefight, two of his platoon were killed. One of them was a very good friend of his, who he'd invited to transfer over into his platoon. The other was a guy that he felt like he had to make him into something, and so apparently he was a little rough on this guy. It broke him up, as it would anybody who was feeling. And besides that, when his vehicle ran over an IED and he got the traumatic brain injury, it was enough for him to be retired from the Marines. Of course, the trauma started with the three-year-old experience, and usually that's how it is. There's often a childhood experience of trauma that predisposes us to PTSD when we grow older, if it didn't give us PTSD right then. At any rate, he came to a workshop that I did in Hidden Valley Zen Center, and I didn't realize that he was a Marine or that he'd done any combat. And he just asked, in the question period, what do you do when memories come up, when images come up? And he was told that you tune in to the energy of them, and you try to stay as present as possible with the energy of them. You don't try to shut them down. You don't entertain them either. It's a middle way experience. And so that's exactly what he did. And it was quite amazing that he was able to do that, given the PTSD, but also it made a huge difference for him. Positive difference. And that's what will gradually free us if we've had any level of trauma in our life, or if we have any fears or terrors that come up in the practice, or any extremely uncomfortable memories. We walk in with courage as far as we can, and if it gets to be close to overwhelming, we back out. But we don't shy away from walking in again another time. And as we do that over and over again, it's rather amazing what can happen. But as I said, most of the time when we come into Zen practice, we assume that we need to just override these things and find that that ease and freedom that's so highly advertised in Zen. It's only found when we are able to work with these difficult mind states. And as we go deeper in the practice, we begin to see through the attitudes, the assumptions, the conditioning that we've grown with, adopted, whatever you want to call it. And as we see through these things, oh, I don't need to hang on to that. This is more than an intellectual assumption. This is when we truly see through a conditioned reaction, we see it as not anything that is needed, that it's artificial, that it's an assumption. One example of this is one day when I was at the Star Market on a Sunday evening in Rochester, and I went to buy something or other, I can't remember what it was. And I get in the checkout line and I get up to the checkout clerk and she is in a mood. Now, ordinarily throughout my life, I would have taken it personally. I wasn't worthy, therefore I was being treated that way. There was something wrong with me, therefore I was being treated that way. I was worthy of disgust and scorn, therefore I was treated that way. But a light bulb went on, and I suddenly realized whatever was going on was her. I just happened to be in the line of fire. And it was amazingly liberating. Not only was it amazingly liberating in that moment, but it also, something was dropped that didn't come back again. This is the nature of our practice. You've heard it before. This practice is truly bodhisattvic. First, it shows us where we're caught. And then it sets us free. It takes work to do that. The deep questioning, the perplexity, the willingness to sink into the perplexity. Who are we really? This bundle of assumptions, which we don't even normally consider a bundle of assumptions, but that's what it is. This persona, this self-image. Is that real? In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha, chapter by chapter, speaks to this. One chapter, number 14, is titled Perfect Peace Lies in Freedom from Characteristic Distinctions. Perfect peace lies in freedom from characteristic distinctions. When Shiro Bunan did not have to fight back, was not in any way feeling that there was anybody to defend. That is expressed by that statement. Perfect freedom lies in not being tied to distinctions. It's an interesting kind of thing, this beingness. We look around the Zendo and we see distinct individual shapes. We interact with those distinct individual shapes, and they appear to have characteristics. And they do. People are tall or short, old or young. They're accountants, or they're artists, or whatever their field is. They love music. They prefer sports. There's nothing wrong with this. What is missing in our perception is the other side of that coin. Who we think we are. While it has some basis in interacting in society up to a point, it's an accumulation of assumptions and conditioning. If we go inward and search for who we really are, some evidence that we're this person that we think we are, I can guarantee that you won't find anything. We can search and search and search and search for lifetimes. And it's worth searching, because it's only through the search and realizing finally, at some deep level, having let go enough, that there isn't any solid something that we are, that the freedom begins to unfold. And we can respond like Sheeta Wanon, faced with what ordinarily would have been a pretty characteristic condemnation and a very difficult thing to deal with in his life, when he was accused of fathering a child that he did not father. But because he was not invested in a self-image, he wasn't invested in being a holy priest or a good man or anything else. There was nothing that motivated him to say, "You got this wrong. I'm going to get back at you for accusing me of this." No. His response was to empathize with the parents who were in torment, to empathize with the girl who was caught in her own pain and suffering. This is the freedom that is built into us. To be able to walk into whatever our karma brings forth to us with that freedom, which is indescribable, but real. Is the true reality. So as you extend that out breath, engage that perplexity. Who am I really? If I'm not who I think I am, who am I? What am I? And reach, try to feel your way to the answer. It can't be found intellectually, but it can be found. Or I should say, a realization can produce results. Present mind is unattainable, past mind is unattainable, future mind is unattainable. With which mind are you working? Arouse the mind that abides nowhere. Walk into the perplexity. Walk into the pain. Walk into the distractions. But explore wordlessly, energetically, any of these mind states. Don't get involved in the story. That will just take you around and around and around and continue your imprisonment in assumptions. On the sixth day of Sesshin, our minds are more let go. It's more possible to go more deeply into this wordless quest. Take advantage of it. It would be hard to come by without going through another 6 days of Sesshin. You're onto something. If you find yourself squeamish about going to Sanzen, or if you find yourself needing to provide an appropriate appearance, tune in. What does that feel like? Is there any fear behind it? Your failure if you haven't produced something that looks good to the teacher? The thing is that the teacher can see right through us, just as I was afraid Kepa Roshi could. And what the teacher sees is the potential for liberation in each one of us, and does their darndest to try to help us reach that on our own, to open to it, to experience it, to expand it, to deepen it, to become truly liberated. The teacher is not about being critical. If there's any implied criticism, it's there only to help the student expand their vision, to grow, to realize that maybe they're stuck in one place that it's not particularly helpful to be stuck in. The practice is truly liberating, and the potential in each one of us is to go there and take advantage of it and to become truly liberated. That's why we were born. So keep on with your quest and trust that no matter what it feels like, it's working. So long as you keep bringing your mind back to the practice, working with that breath, with that perplexity, with that, you don't even know what, it's working. Thank you for listening. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.